Good afternoon, Sláinte, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, the beautiful city of Guelph, Ontario. I'm coming to you once again from an undisclosed location that only seven people know about, but we're here every Thursday at 5 p.m., 1700 hours, for those of you that follow that type of time system. And on the line, as usual these days, I'm joined by one Adam A. Donaldson, Chief Assignment Editor of Open Sources Guelph, Guelph Politico, and also the host of End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, one of our movie shows. Adam, are you with us?
Oh, just barely, yes.
Just barely. After that intro, he didn't know what to do.
Hanging on for that intro, yeah.
You totally know what to do. I'm just joking. As per normal, today we have a slate of topics that probably take about 3 hours to hack out. But in the second part of the show, we will be talking about the conservative leadership race and everything that's going on with that, because it's quite exciting in the past few days. Also, a bit that I wanted to call Trump Trouble, like it was a Looney Tunes cartoon, like Trump Trouble. But This Week in Trump, as we normally call it. But before that, we're going to be talking about the China crisis, China fight, Canada versus China. This match is scheduled for one fall, or many falls, but again, heavy-duty topic. But off the top, speaking of heavy topics, Adam, when I first heard about this story, I immediately thought it was false news, but did a bit of digging. And we're talking about the story in Maclean's magazine that said the Nova Scotia mass shooter was quite possibly in being paid by the RCMP as an informant due to an amount of money he had taken out of a Brink's office a couple of weeks. I think it was 19 or 20 days before the mass shooting incident. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, you're right. It did sound like crazy conspiracy theory craziness to me. And when I saw this story pop up the end of last week on Twitter, I thought, oh, what crazy conspiracy website cranked this out? And then
exactly.
I looked at like Maclean's. Well, they're not, they're not exactly known for.
No, they have lawyers and things.
And Maclean's too was just bought by St. Joseph's Media, which is a Toronto-based company, which is trying to get serious and trying to relaunch and rebrand. Magazines like Maclean's and Chatelaine. So why would they, pursue something as kind of reckless as the charge? Yeah, it sounds crazy, but. I think what it does is raise a lot of peculiar questions about this. You can't just withdraw $475,000. You can't just go to your local.
In cash.
Yeah, in cash.
Yeah, that's what's odd considering the times, right?
Right. And the method by which,
among other things,
how he withdrew it from a Brink's, from a Brink's outlet, which, it's not something you can easily access. From as sort of a private user of your local banks, this isn't exactly an option open to you. Now it is known that Wortmann did have businesses. He did have business interests. He was a denturist. He had a holding company that he had assets in, including two of his police car replicas. But even at that, he should not have been able to just as a regular sort of private business banker, someone using the bank, just to be able to do this. What it does, as you said in the article, what it did is raise some red flags for some of these former RCMP officers who recognized the method of how this kind of large cash transfer happens and how large the amount is that when it comes to what they call agent informants. So you have information informants who are just sort of regular guys on the street who get, $20, $50 for a tip. But then you have the agent informants who are basically sort of central in organizing really big criminal cases that basically the case doesn't get organized unless they're intricately involved in it. And this is kind of the way those informants get paid off, which automatically makes you question if he was an informant, what was he informing on? What was he involved with? And then it makes you wonder, B, is this why all these red flags about Wortmann, the guns, the domestic disturbance, the police car replicas, all these red flags that, you know, before he went out and shot 22 people, is this why they kind of went unanswered? Because according to the technical requirements, for the RCMP to protect their agent informant, unless it means lying to the court, they can do anything to protect the identity of these informants. So, again, a lot more questions than answers, and I think that's what's really kind of scary, is because when McLean's went to the Nova Scotia RCMP detachment and said, like, hey, we have lots of questions, all of a sudden the RCMP didn't want to talk about it either.
Clammed up, that's right. And it is one of those things that way more questions are going to come out of this, and one wonders if all the questions will be answered due to the nature of this and the secrecy of things such, or people such as informants. Although everybody that spoke to this, I don't think anyone went on the record. It was all unnamed sources, former and current RCMP, said that this case has all the hallmarks of a police informant operation. It would seem that the shooter had spent time with Hell's Angels out that way, and was also associated with somebody who had ties to a Mexican drug cartel, and that happens to be the person who allegedly printed the stickers for the replica cars. So there's this circle of all these interconnected things, like there's an element of organized crime there, or at least he's known to have been an associate of people involved with organized crime. They don't know where the money is. There's no, you take $475,000 out of the bank. They seem to have no idea where this money is, or if they do, they're not saying. I did see a couple of European stories that echoed this, that referenced this as well. So it's gone kind of global, as did the shooting as well. A couple of days after this article came out, Paul Wells, also of McLean's, chimed in and said, you know, it is time for a complete, full judicial inquiry. And it sounds like that was going to happen, or they were talking a bit about it, but of course with the COVID situation, pandemic, that it got sidelined. I'm sure some people somewhere are breathing a bit of a sigh of relief that this has gone away, at least for the time being. But when you've got all sorts of unnamed sources speaking to three different reporters, it seems, at McLean's, this is going to get strange, and it's going to get hot, I think. There's no way that they would commit to this story, again, from a non-conspiratorial sense, and get it out there if there wasn't some merit to it, because it is so completely strange.
Yeah, and the strange thing is, too, that one of the lingering questions through all this is being like, what was the obsession with the police? Because, you know, Wortmann's background, he was a denturist, you know, it wasn't like he was in kind of like a police adjacent business. He had his issues, obviously, but the big question of all this is like, why the replica police cars? Why the replica uniforms? What is his obsession with the police? And one of the quotes in the article was, he wanted to be a Mountie. He was acting like a Mountie. He was doing Mountie things. It's clear to me that something went wrong, which was one of the anonymous officers who participated in the article talking about it. What went wrong, what it sounds like, if it's true that he was an informant, it's kind of easy to see where someone who clearly has maybe some delusional issues, somebody like Gabriel Wortmann, you know, to suddenly think, here I am, I'm in the center of this RCMP case. I'm practically RCMP, so I'm going to get my own cruiser, I'm going to get my own uniform, I'm going to get my own guns. And, it, you know, this does sound crazy.
Delusional stuff, yeah.
And it's been known to happen. All of a sudden, you know, he's, you know, like Joe Pesci in Lethal Weapon 2, it's like he's hanging out with the cops, even though his role is as a criminal informant. But his proximity to the cops makes him think he's one of them. So he goes out and sets the stage for himself. And he gets the costume, he gets the props, and makes himself, I guess by sheer force of delusional will, a member of the RCMP, which also makes you have to wonder, you know, again, if all of this is true, what kind of stuff was he involved in? Or what kind of stuff was he doing for the RCMP that they were able to overlook someone who was clearly mentally disturbed?
Yeah, and they watch informants closely, I would imagine. So they, somebody must have known. Well, there were people that did know about the replica cars and the weapons that he had that he wasn't supposed to, including that the woman who moved away. And unfortunately, the people that bought her home were some of the people killed in the incident. But the she was the one that brought up had gone to the RCMP and said, this guy says he doesn't like cops, he's gonna kill one, wasn't that?
Yeah.
And then they just, it sounds like that they ignored it or shrugged it off or wanted to go away. It's like, yeah, just don't worry about it, it's okay. And of course it was not okay. So you have to wonder, because you would think a complaint like that coming from, I don't know, anybody generally would be thoroughly investigated, right? If it was, you know, if you called in your neighbor to the RCMP or whatever, said, this guy's got guns, he says he's going to kill police. You know, at the time that woman said, you know, it wasn't that he was going to kill her necessarily, but she was, the fear of violence was there. And all of that has just been, or was at the time, just sidelined. So I think the call for the inquiry is probably a very in-depth inquiry, and not an inquiry or an investigation done by other police either, by the way. There needs to be a committee of some kind struck to deeply look into this. But I mean, you know, maybe the fear is what is going to come out is going to be a lot worse than just the usual, let's say, which I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's more like if they get deep into the weeds on whatever the heck is going on. But this adds to it completely. It's a phenomenal story. And I wonder, there hasn't been a follow-up yet, has there? It's just, this was dropped. No. And then Paul Wells had his piece, and then it just kind of like, this is strictly almost a McLean's exclusive. I was wondering where they got the footage? And they obviously got it from the place, the footage of the shooter taking the money out. Mm-hmm. It's odd I wouldn't think that kind of thing is publicly available. It's just kind of, they have footage of this. Maybe it was part of the compilation of what were his movements before everything that happened, but it's very, very strange.
Yeah. There has to be some kind of inquiry into this specifically. And the trick is too that this is probably like the first like kind of major new bit of reporting we've gotten about this in the last 3 months, probably since the week it happened. And so, you know, there have been these long lingering questions about this, but, you know, goodness knows there hasn't been a whole lot of time to dedicate to them because there's been so much else going on. COVID, the new Black Lives Matter rallies and things like that, you know, Canada, China, which we're going to talk about next. You know, there's all these sorts of things going on. There's something about this in the midst of its craziness. And it seems to, just the idea of it answers a lot of questions. Why wasn't there a provincial alert about this? Why was there a report that he was taken into custody when they apparently got into a gunfight with him and killed him? You know, why was the response not what you would typically expect of a police response to something like this, that it was kind of low key, that they were trying not to make a big deal out of it? Well, maybe if they were trying to save an informant, maybe that answers it. And again, like, this sounds like completely crazy, kooky conspiracy thinking, but, you know, we don't have another alternative. We don't have an alternative narrative. We certainly don't want to have one from the RCMP. And, you know, on top of all this, It just, there needs to be an answer. There, you know, we need to hear from the RCMP, because it is going to get out somewhere. There is paper with Wortmann's name on it if he was an informant, because he was being handled by people, he was being handled by other officers. There has to be paperwork. and that someone's going to trip over it eventually.
And where did the money go, among other things?
Yeah.
So an evolving story, we will most certainly get back to that, I'm sure, in the next weeks, months, or perhaps even years, because that's the amount of time sometimes these things take. Speaking of taking a lot of time, 560-plus days since the Michaels, as they are known now, the two Michaels were arrested in China. And this is coming to a bit of a head this week with a lot of back and forth between the Chinese government and the Canadian government and other parties involved, including the, I believe she is still the wife, but I don't know if the separation is because the Michael is locked up, went to the media saying, I guess they're at the point now where they figure there's nothing to lose. So she had gone to the CBC and to the Globe and Mail and said, the Canadian government needs to do something. We have legal opinions saying that this whole extradition proceedings that have been put against Meng Wanzhou from the Huawei company, she's a top executive. I think most people know that part of the story. And there is also, what can you tell me about the letter that came out, Adam? I just heard briefly about it, but I didn't get the total. It sounds like a bunch of people came out, some of them former liberals from the list of names that I saw, saying the government doesn't need, they could end the extradition proceedings anytime that they wanted against Meng Wanzhou. And the logic behind that is if that happens, then the Michaels will be freed.
Right. It was a letter from 19 sort of former civil servants, so people who used to be parliamentarians, people who used to be diplomats. So on that list, you have people like Lloyd Axworthy, former Supreme Court Justice Louis Arbour, Lawrence Cannon, Hugh Siegel, Ed Broadbent. So, you know, these are people who are not...
Some high rollers there, yeah, from back in the day. Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say they're not like rebel media types, but...
Yes, although they're probably as well. But
yeah, no, fair enough. But yeah, but the letter basically said that the Ministry of Justice should intervene to end the extradition court order, because they went to court earlier this week in Vancouver to decide on a schedule to see to the end of the hearing. Basically, the hearing will. The last hearing on this matter will be April 30th, 2021, if not before. Maybe they get through things a bit faster, but that seems doubtful considering the wheels of justice are sort of grinding a bit slower because of COVID. So we're basically looking at another 9 months until this thing finishes up in the court system. But then what? If the court finds in favor, like, yeah, all this is in order, you know, extradite away. There's going to be appeals and stuff. So who knows how much longer this could be. So the argument in the letter is stop the extradition order, you know, sort of keep her in custody, because then we at least have options. We can then go through like the prisoner swap idea, or we can just like drop her off at Vancouver Airport or whatever and see what happens. It's just that there's a process happening right now. Trudeau's argument is, we have to let the process happen. So the argument of these like 220 some odd diplomats, it's like, just stop the process, because, you know, if that's the excuse, stop the process, no more excuse, then there's options. I found the letter kind of unbelievably naive, given the fact that these are former diplomats, because, you know, I'm not so worried about the United States, right? Like, because we have Meng Wanzhou in custody at their request, because they want to charge her with, I think, fraud having to do with violating the Iran sanctions, or at least for Huawei is a violation of, as a company, of the sanctions against Iran. But yeah, I'm not worried about the United States, because, you know, when Mike Pompeo mentioned it the other day, that was the first time we really kind of heard about it in a while. It's because the last week the Chinese charged with the two Michaels with espionage. But in terms of priorities, like, and we'll talk about this in a bit, you know, the Trump Justice Department is all over the freaking place. Oh, yeah. mostly trying to stick it to his enemies and help his friends. Like, how high in the list of priorities is getting their judicial hands on Meng Wanzhou? So I think that's a complete non-starter. The bigger question is, what happens when we say, okay, let's swap Ming Wanzhou for the two Michaels and everything's hunky-dory. What happens the next time China gets TO'd at us about something, right? Do they take other Canadians hostage, like having understood that it works? Because Trudeau's argument is like, look, the legal system is complicated. And in China, it's like, no, it's actually not that complicated. Either you do something or you don't, because that's the way things kind of work here. So the thing about the letter is it is right about one thing. The international order is not what it once was. And sort of the old expectations of how the rules work is maybe that part of it is maybe naive. But I don't think the answer here either is just, you know, dropping Ming Wanzhou off at the airport or going to a secret field in Belize somewhere and having, you know, people walk, you know, at the same time towards their respective parties. I'm not sure that I think that
the classic,
the
classic exchange, even though for the longest time, China was saying, oh, this, you know, the arrest of the Michaels has absolutely nothing to do with this. But now, when their spokesperson is out, it's like, well, Canada should do the right thing. And if they do this, then we'll see. Like, they're not even hiding it at this point. Canada had has all of its friends lined up, the G7, the European Union, America as well. I think Mike Pompeo spoke out about this, saying, you know, there's no China's to do the right thing. So people have taken sides on this. I think you might be right about the naivete and the oversimplifying how this could come to a resolution, because they're obviously not just going to let her go. I could see something creative happening, like the Nissan executive in the instrument case, a little bit more cloak and dagger stuff. But I didn't know this, but Meng Wanzhou was actually fairly well established in Canada. She's actually like a permanent resident. Mm. So it's not just as if she happened to be here or was passing through and was picked up on an extradition warrant or whatever. She has kids here. She has family. She's lived here since 2001 in Vancouver, as wealthy business people from China tend to do, right? Live in Vancouver or the West Coast and use it as a base of operations for the world, pretty much, not just the North American market. Yeah, and what you're saying about this, the charges as well. The charges, what she's charged with, the violating the Iran sanctions, isn't even a thing here in Canada, right? It's not. She wouldn't be, if she was a Canadian or working under Canadian law, there is no violation, because these sanctions strictly exist in the U.S. The company supposedly that dodged the, I thought this was funny because it does sound like it's out of a movie or something, espionage. Skycom was the name of the company that was created to allegedly dodge these sanctions. And the argument that they're making is that, well, it's not a division, it's not Huawei, it's Skycom. And so I guess that will all be fought out in court when it does eventually happen. And also, I thought they were going to steal some technology from T-Mobile, which is a large mobile firm in the United States. Tappy the robot is a factor in this. Have you heard of Tappy the robot? It's like it simulates a hand. Simulates a hand typing on a phone. Like, of course, I got into the tech part of it because this is what I do. I wanted to find out, like, what the heck is the arguments as to why she should be extradited to the U.S. There, 13 Canadian senators have come out calling on Justin Trudeau to impose the Magnitsky sanctions. I did a bit of digging on that, and as far as I understand it, that Magnitsky sanctions, they didn't say Magnitsky style. That's some sort of case that went down in the U.S. Regarding Russia and sanctions. Have you heard of this Magnitsky sanctions? It sounds like that. What is it from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Sikorsky protocols? Again, something you don't hear about. I don't know if the senators have been watching Agents in their downtime. I don't know. I thought that was weird that they wanted to apply an American law to a Canadian situation. I don't know what that is going to resolve, but then again, I don't know.
Well, I think the Magnitsky Act does have has an international reach. It's the same law that Russia was trying to get around.
Yes.
You know, it has to do, you know, they've limited adoptions that Americans can adopt. But right. It is an American bill. I think what they were advocating for is like coming up with a Magnitsky style act, which would, I think, target China, which obviously would not end well because, you know, we have the tendrils in China are too deep. It's hard to separate ourselves from them in terms of just the economic power they come to represent, in terms of like just, you know, how much stuff in your house is made in China, or how much stuff in your house had, you know, part of it was made in China, or some piece of it was made in China, or your phone, you know.
Plus, exactly.
Where does that come from?
And going the other way too, like every single soybean that we can spare goes to China, right? That is truth. Yeah. Like, and canola and all those things that they put restrictions on when this fight was initially heating up. It was canola. They came up with something with pork. This is the way China works. It's like, well, you know, we can't take this because it's some sort of disease and we're not sure. And
yeah,
I also, one of my regular reads when things are normal is the Ontario Farmer. So that's all about the agricultural aspect of it, plus being a graduate of the Ontario Agricultural College, but it doesn't matter. But it's significant. It is absolutely significant. So geopolitics writ large, hostage diplomacy sounds like it. But yeah, well, I really, again, this is something else I really wonder where this is going to go. Is it just going to drag on throughout the summer to the extradition case? Is Canada hoping that once she is indeed extradited and goes to the U.S., then Canada is off the hook? I doubt it very much. I think once she is on that plane or taken to the border, like you say, in the exchange, or if there is no exchange where they walk across the Rainbow Bridge or whatever, it would probably at that point get worse.
There is a question of how far China can push things too, because they do want things from us. Yahweh does have a presence here. Like, Yahweh has a big office in one of the Toronto burbs too, I can't remember. But, you know, they want to be in on 5G in Canada. One of the rationales of what's going on in China right now is they're kind of PO'd that Bell Media and one of the other carriers went with another company to establish their 5G.
It was like Ericsson or something, like one of the other European ones, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah. They want to be a player in Canada, the United States too, for that matter. But, you know, they can't push it too hard. On the other hand, maybe they feel they have the leverage because they have, you know, a lot of the money and the influence and the technology that maybe they think that they can just run roughshod over us. But China is doing so much around the world to present the image of the new, of being the new benign superpower with like the Belt and Road initiatives in Africa. It's really hard to see them being too aggressive, like responding to the stuff going on in Canada with taking Ming Wanzhou to court, yes, but, you know, sort of taking it up a notch by, you know, not like maybe going forward with a public trial of the Michaels. I'm not sure. This is one of those weird, crazy diplomatic situations where every proposal has a very good reason not to do it, and it's going to be a question of what wrong choice is the worst choice. And that's what I'm, because Justin Trudeau isn't very good at making those decisions. So I think that's the worrisome part of all this.
And it sounds like the Michaels confinement isn't as nice as Meng Wanzhou's is, but would hope something like that would change in the meantime. Anyway, we're going to have to leave that there once again. Completely maxed out the half hour. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM. We're going to take a little bit of a break so we can both catch our breath, and we will be back in short order, so stay tuned. Toronto town. around. That was a lovely, gentle folk song from an album that was lying on the floor of the bunker from a band called DOA, a newish album, Fight Back. I had been meaning to play that before, and I didn't because I couldn't remember whether there were swears in it or not. Sounds like not. And that song was called, as you can guess, Killer Cops. Yeah, where do you go from that? Is it, we go to America and speak about Donald J. Trump and his fizzled rally, among other things, that didn't go his way this past week. It sounds like the I really felt like an older person trying to, what's with these K-poppers and these TikTokers ordering all the tickets. I'm sure somebody who is going to the Trump rally is trying to figure out what the hell that's about. A million tickets possibly ordered, overflow venues, 40,000 is going to be out in the street. We're going to be talking out in the street to all the people. 6,200 maybe, and that includes all the workers and security and the other people that were there that had to be there. And some of them ended up with COVID, right? It's half dozen workers setting the whole thing up in Tulsa ended up with COVID. So I'm sure somebody else ended up with COVID. And maybe that's some of the fear as to why people in a state that Trump won so resoundingly had stayed away, among other things.
Yeah, and about a dozen Secret Service agents have been told to self-quarantine for 2 weeks who were attending the Tulsa rally. So, not a big deal. I mean, these are people just in charge of the security of the president. So
slow down the testing, please. And, don't worry about it because...
That moment, because it sounded just like such a Jerry Lewis.
Slow down the testing, please. He did. He sounded like the Nutty Professor. You're right.
Slow down the testing.
By his tone, you would think that he was joking because it actually sounded like he was making a joke at that point. And then later he's like, I never kid. I don't kid about it. Yeah, like, so what the hell?
Yeah. I not to mitigate the influence of the K-poppers and the TikTokers, but I do.
Like a Dr. Seuss book, K-poppers and TikTokers.
I know it's bad.
Yeah, I love it though. That's fantastic.
No, I do wonder how much of it was on them. I have no doubt that there was some influence, but at the end of the day, they were going to have a bonus rally in this area. This overflow area. They were expecting thousands of people to be outside the Bank of Oklahoma Center where this rally took place. And nobody was there. And you would think that if there were all these thousands of people who were anxious to get tickets to see Trump, and they were told, hey, there's this additional outdoor rally you don't need tickets for. You just have to kind of roll up and be there and hang out and wait for Trump and Pence to come out. But nobody did.
A tumbleweed blows across and a... Yeah.
Right. So it's like, way to go, K-poppers. But I like this.
There's more to it than the K-poppers and the TikTok people.
Theoretically, all those people who couldn't get tickets because of the K-pop people would attend the outdoor rally, but nobody was at the outdoor rally. So I think 6,200 was the ceiling on that, and maybe that's that is a greater sign. I mean, yep, one has to keep in mind that Oklahoma is one of the hot spots of COVID right now, along with Texas and Florida and Arizona, all the places Trump is going. that may be a coincidence, but there are incredible increases in the number of hospitalizations. A lot of people think because the deaths aren't going up as rapidly that it's okay. But it's because there are so many young people now getting sick that you don't see the number of deaths because, of course, the vast majority, like more than 3/4 of the deaths have been people who are older, the older parts of the population. Young people aren't dying, but they are definitely getting very, very sick because of the lack of policy from the Trump White House. And you had Anthony Fauci and the gang testifying in Congress this week that basically the White House isn't getting in touch with them anymore about this. The White House has completely abdicated any part of the COVID-19 response. So these states are now almost literally on their own.
Yeah, and it's 50 different responses as opposed to a national response. And Trump's response is to just use this phrase, and I don't approve of this phrase, obviously, the Kung Flu, because he knows it gets a response. He's done it a couple of times. He did it at the Tulsa rally, and then he did it at another rally that was at a school somewhere. I actually missed where it was. And Kayleigh McEnany was taken to task on a press conference. It was interesting to see the journalists from different organizations tag team her, essentially, to try and get out of her. It's like, so what does Trump actually mean by this? Is he being racist, or what's the story? And of course, she did the deflect and bounce it off. Somebody who also has large doubts about Donald Trump after having been behind the curtain, John Bolton. John Bolton's book, The Room Where It Happened, has been released to the media, at least. I'm not sure when the wide release is.
It came out this week.
It's out. And dribs and drabs are hitting the news. Donald Trump says Bolton must pay a very big price for revealing the stuff that he has revealed. It would seem that if he has revealed anything classified, and you would think, again, going back to lawyers reviewing things, that he hasn't revealed anything that was top secret to the nation, he would forfeit the $2 million advance and any of the money that he made on the book. But I think it's not as if he's hurting for money. So it's almost at the point where that possibly doesn't matter. But he's – and this is – the. To be clear, John Bolton is a very right-wing person. He is a hawk. He's not – this isn't crazy lefty stuff coming from the Democrats. This is somebody who is in the family. This is, and I guess that's another thing, too. Is it Trump's niece is putting out a book as well?
Yep.
Of salacious family details, and I'm sure they're trying to bury that as well. I suppose we'll save that for another day. But in terms of the Bolton book, it sounds like there's some definite grenades going to come out of that and have been falling out of this thing. He has absolutely no, it sounds like he has zero respect for Donald Trump. He called his mind an archipelago of dots, no focus. He just recalibrates. He just does whatever. The whole North Korea dance with Kim Jong-un is just for show. But when it comes down to it, he's really a pushover. Hanging out with the strong men that he loves so much, like Putin and Kim Jong-un, and well, hasn't been down to see, I guess, if he goes down to see Bolsonaro, that he's probably in trouble. He'll probably definitely get COVID if he goes down there. But
Brazil has over a million cases on its own.
There's a pattern, though, for which countries have tragic COVID responses and who's in charge. But
right. The thing with Bolton's book, too, is that I don't think it's particularly
revelatory.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not that, because I think these are things that we've gotten out in, other books like Fire and Fury and Fear and all these books that go into Trump's inner circle. It's the thing that he likes strongmen. He hates being told what to do. He doesn't want to learn. He hates the briefings.
When he hates Trudeau, supposedly.
Hates Trudeau. When he goes to the briefings, he doesn't sit there and listen to his security professionals talk about what's in the briefing. He wants to talk about grievances. He wants to talk about who's picked him off today. He wants to talk about...
beautiful piece of chocolate cake. my personal favorite.
Cake, women he seduced. He wants to talk about anything except that. So,
Apprentice. Yeah, it's stuff like that.
Yeah, what is surprising that it does come from the inside. Like you said, this is like the biggest bomb from somebody who was actually working inside the White House and a step forward, definitely a bigger step forward than we've gotten from Jim Mattis or John Kelly, the other kind of quote unquote adults in the room who have mostly kept their peace. It is kind of important in that way. However, I don't think it can be it can't be said enough that John Bolton isn't your friend. He's not part of the resistance. He's making money. He could have very easily accepted the congressional subpoena. Or he could have easily volunteered to go to Congress. and laid all this out. He could have easily said to Adam Schiff, look, you're looking at Ukraine, but you also got to look at China. You also got to look at this. You got to look at that. But he didn't. He cashed a check. Cashing a check was more important to him than doing his patriotic duty. He can come out and say all the live long day that Donald Trump is a dangerous demagogue, blah, 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 blah. Thanks for telling us. We didn't already know. But he didn't do the thing which you're supposed to do when you're a whistleblower, which is blow the whistle. Instead, he wrote a book about it.
Yes. America. Yeah. There's a book in everyone. It's a requirement, right? The book has to come out. So I'm sure we'll see more books before the year is out and before it's, I don't say all over.
Right.
But...
No, that's to say nothing of all the stuff going on in the Justice Department. Michael Flynn was ordered to be let go, even though he's like pled guilty twice. He had them trying to surreptitiously get rid of the U.S. attorney of the SDNY because he's got a ton of open cases against Trump friends, and he pushed back. Eventually was able to get his chosen successor as opposed to a Trump appointee. And then you had two prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office in front of Congress yesterday talking about how Bill Barr is putting pressure not just on, you know, letting people like Roger Stone go, taking it easy on people like Roger Stone, but also chasing like ideological red herrings, like you know, stopping them, like bringing antitrust charges against, you know, cannabis companies that are merging.
Because I mean, yeah, and as like, we know,
that's crazy. You know, there's exactly five media companies that own 95% of the media in the United States. But by all means, drop the hammer on, you know, Joe and Bob's smoking emporium or whatever.
Well, I mean, and as we know, Trump's whole thing is Trump 2020. That started. Yeah. That started probably in 2016. So there's nothing. Nothing should surprise anyone in that. What would be surprising is conservatives 2020 question mark 2019 maybe question mark. Last week we saw, or this week I guess, late early this week, two debates, en français and in English, one after the other, with the conservative leadership race in Canada. And some people are saying, you know, because people are saying that conservative leadership race, what's that all about? The Greens are having one too. Mm-hmm. As hosted by TV Ontario, there was a debate there as well. Did you see any of that, just as an aside? No?
No, I missed it, and it was weird because I feel like I didn't get an email about it from the Green Party. So that was
Come on, Green Party, we watch these things, we can talk about them, but anyway.
I didn't find out about it until that was over, and that would probably be a more interesting debate to watch because I think there's like 10 contenders 20? For the Green Party leadership.
Yes, there was two sets of five debated each other, I believe. So. Yeah. One in a top hat. And see, we remember the guy with the top hat. So there was something behind that. Anyway, back to the conservatives. Four people in the running for that job. It sounds like the French debate, I did see a small part of it, was pretty hot between O'Toole and McKay, the two front runners, whereas the other two, I believe, Derek Sloan and Leslyn Lewis, don't really speak too much French. Maybe a petit peu, we're not sure. And then the English one the next day was toned down a little bit. O'Toole was probably told, look, dude, don't lose your cool. So this is the great question. Who will be the king of the pile after this is done, O'Toole or McKay? And which of the social conservative two contenders, who both managed to raise the $100,000 to be in the race, who will they back in there? Interestingly, the conservatives use a ranked ballot when it comes to leaders. They seem to be reluctant to use it for anything else or advocate for it in terms of, I don't know, general elections and stuff. But the whoever is made the king, and it probably will be a king at the end of this, needs to have the backing of at least one or some of the social conservatives that back the other two, or clearly seem to back the other two candidates. Although, in terms of endorsements, I don't think Derek Sloan has any. So Leslyn,
that's hardly surprising.
Yeah. Leslyn Lewis may be the person to watch in terms of the one who will be the king maker.
The one, or at least the one who comes out of this unscathed.
Yeah.
Because you know, Derek Sloan not only spent most of the French and English debate talking about how there's, you know, we don't do enough about abortion.
The babies, the baby. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. It's,
not babies.
You know, even before that, he was, you know, questioning the, you know, the fidelity of Dr. Tam, who's, you know, of, you know, Asian origin. She might be, you know, in
taking instruction
China, you know?
From the Politburo. Oh, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, he's,
he paid the money, though, right? Equal
but, you
time.
Know, who is the woman, the social conservative who ran in the PC leadership in Ontario? I can't remember her
Greenwich.
Name.
Greenwich.
That's right.
Tanya Greenwich.
He could be that figure.
Yes. And she...
But he's not.
She had assurances from Doug Ford, which were promptly broken, right? So wasn't that...
Right, but this is the strange thing. We'll get to the other thing in a minute. Between O'Toole and McKay.
Oh, yes, that's fun. Sorry. Yes.
What I find bizarre about O'Toole is, like, I remember in the last leadership run, he didn't, I don't know his exact, like, makeup of his politics, but he didn't strike me as someone who was going full on, like, I'm against, you know what I hate?
True blue.
You know what I hate? I hate when they don't let free speech on campus. Like, he's gone, like, he's like, yeah, he's the Kelly Leach.
He's ticking all the boxes. Cancel culture, right. Terrible. Yeah, it's he's that guy. Thin blue line.
And what he's doing is from what I understand from his campaign strategy, like he's running to be the second choice for the social conservatives. And I was like, I understand why this is a constituency that you need to win in order to get the conservative leadership, but it's a constituency that does you zero good when you're out on the campaign trail in a national campaign.
Yeah.
So are you really debasing yourself this far by chasing hobgoblins like cancel culture?
Yeah, because if he does go whole hog to the right, then that's he won't be prime minister. And that's I think that's why it sounds like the establishment types and the conservatives are backing McKay because there's, let's say, pedigree there in terms of he, you know, former MP and was the leader of, well, the last leader of the Conservatives proper, right? Mm-hmm. He's the more, you know, open the window a bit more, let's say, and let more people in. I think he is seen as the one that may, and this is still all possibly sort of maybe, be the person to bring the different parts of Canada to the... back to the blue tent, which it remains to be seen. But there's so much toxic infighting going on, even just amongst these, I want to say these four, but it's not really the four of them. It's O'Toole and McKay with this business that's transpiring. It's an evolving story about hacking and espionage, but yet it's not, it doesn't sound like it's as vicious as both sides are making it out to be in terms of hacking. You know, to hack, you actually have to hack in. It sounds like there is, and sounds from what I could tell, that the person who was some kid working for a constituency office kind of went in and looked around, but somebody gave him the password. It's not like it's not like the movie Hackers, right? It's not like Pierre, it's not like Pierre Poutine, where something very questionable went on, also within the Conservative Party. And happened to be in this town, by the way, which I don't think people will forget that here. But this, so talk about a bit about the story, because I missed bits and pieces of it, because I know some of it dropped today in terms of what this kid, what this young person who was involved in the campaign was saying, what actually happened.
Right. Well, let's be clear about something. Even Pierre Poutine wasn't hacking. It was, you know, burner phones and vanilla credit cards.
There's going to be a name for quasi-hacking, schlacking.
It's like literally Schwacking. Anyone can do that. Yes. It doesn't require any particular technical skill. So,
but still not found. So
there was an intern at the office for Calgary Centre MP, Gary McLean, at his constituency office. Apparently someone, McLean is a supporter of O'Toole. So he gets access to these calls and things. And he's on the Zoom. Somebody gives him the passcode to the Zoom account so that he can post something or get some kind of information, and eventually he takes it to this person, Lal, who is with some sort of volunteer with the McKay campaign, and Jamie Lal, and makes him this offer of, you know, hey, I got all this info. And Lal apparently, and this comes from the kid, Lal says, Lal ended the meeting there, and sometime later, the intern emailed Lal and said, hey, here's all this information I downloaded. Do you want it? And apparently, Lal did not download the information. The kid does not know if Lal downloaded the information either. But apparently, the Zoom account for the O'Toole campaign was accessed from three sites, two in Calgary and one in Toronto.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, none of this has sort of been substantiated because this is coming from the O'Toole campaign, with, of course, the firm denials coming from the McKay campaign. But yeah, there was a new Toronto Star article about this where they apparently got commentary from the intern in question. They did not identify the intern. They gave him anonymity in exchange for comment. But yeah, it's just this is a dirty situation that a lot of conservative strategists are looking at going, you know, you guys are screwing this up.
Exactly.
You know, here we are. We have, you know, a liberal government that is bleeding from scandal, that is bleeding from the red tape. The credit rating was downgraded this week from AAA+ to AAA-, I think.
Well, it's still an A, but yeah.
So, you know, there's blood in the water. The liberal and one strategist said this. I can't remember who, but he said, like, the only person smiling this week is Justin Trudeau, and you better freaking believe it, because he's got, you know, he's shoveling stuff at record pace, trying to stay afloat. But you know, you look at this party that was thought, you know what? As soon as we get a leader, we're going to pull the plug in the fall and go to election. What do you think of them apples? I'm willing to bet.
And it'll be something like, stop tearing down the statues and there the are preborn some, children. And yeah, it's they're all over the place.
Liberal headquarters watching all this go down and going, please, please pull the plug in the fall. Because nothing is going to make people run to the Liberals faster than seeing like this level of dysfunction in the Conservative Party. And my question is, like, who at McKay HQ, if they were involved in this, thought this was a great idea? He's walking to accept the leadership of the Conservatives. Now, they say internally, they say it's a closer race than we might think.
But especially with runoff ballots, and that it will prove to be, it might not be 13 of them as it was with Scheer and Maxime Bernier.
But just from the appearance of this, it looks bad because you have four people as opposed to the panacea of conservatives who came out last time. It seems the party is very much disinterested in a leadership contest. So just take the most obvious person. So, you know, at the end of this doesn't make anyone look good. It's certainly not making McKay look good. It's not making O'Toole look good. It's not making the party look good. And it's just, you know, as they're trying to make a decision about, you know, who could literally be the next prime minister of Canada.
Well, whoever wins, we will strive, as always, to try and get them on this show. And this show is Open Sources Guelph, heard here every Friday on CFRU 90. Friday! Every Thursday. He's got Friday on his mind. Thursday at 5 p.m. Oh, I really blew that one. On CFRU 93.3 FM. Adam A. Donaldson, people want to find out more about you. Where can they do that?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. They can go to Guelph Politico at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I am Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. And I'm also found in my bunker at certain times during the day, like right now. But having said that, please tune in next week for another exciting episode. Stay tuned for a rebroadcast of Sounds Good to Me. And stay tuned to CFRU for all of your listening needs. Thanks once again for joining us. And take care and enjoy the rest of your week and the weekend.